Name something that gets passed around.
A joint.
A joint.
Legalized marijuana is always a very difficult question.
The time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
From now on, I smoke weed exclusively with white people.
Well, I'm getting higher next time.
They're walking on their pants with their cap on backwards, listening to the Animal Man, the Snoopy Snoopy Poop Dog.
There's definitely cannabis in there, and it makes sure that I can sleep now.
What's to keep somebody from getting all potted up on weed and then getting behind the wheel?
Don't piss off your old dealer.
Marijuana is not the kind of thing that ought to be legalized.
I know you're not supposed to admit that you smoke pot, but I don't drink alcohol.
Let's get out of here. I have some really good weed back at the hotel.
I used to smoke marijuana.
I don't care if an adult wants to smoke marijuana. They shouldn't go to prison for it either.
Ah, yeah. Welcome back, everybody. Time for Toker Talk Radio. And a quick update for those of you who've been listening. Thanks to all the new listeners or returning listeners that we got back who have finally found me again. The name of the show will be changing on May 1st. It'll be The Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville, and we hope that attracts back some more old listeners who've lost us. But also, there have been some concern about the format changes. There's not going to be a lot of format change for the first hour. It'll just be a little more regular segments, kind of like what we do with Dr. Mitch, but more of that. But hour two is going to stay the same. We're still going to do Toker Talk Radio. I'm still going to talk about whatever the hell I feel like talking about in this hour. And we still appreciate you sticking around for that. And we'll still be here on YouTube streaming live with video. So that's not really going to change. Not a whole lot changing, just the title and a new website, a new distribution platform. But for those of you listening right now, the way you've been listening, nothing's changing. So I did want to talk about that United Airlines overbooking thing that happened. We'll get to that a little later in the show because I got, you know, as a guy who's done 300,000 air miles in the past 5 years, 100,000 in the last year, I got a lot of opinions on flying. So we'll talk about that coming up a little bit later. But first, I wanted to talk about this weekend because I took off to Phoenix, Arizona. There's from my Instagram account, at Radical Russ on Instagram, where I got to film a new television show for New Frontier Data. It's a pilot that we filmed called Cannabis Insight, and I'm the anchor man, and that's why I had to fly down to Phoenix to cover or to do some filming. So there I am. You can see some cactus there in the background, and of course I've got my hippie speedball, my pipe of weed, and a diet rock star. And you may be wondering about the wrinkled Boise State shirt. The reason behind that, last year when I was homeless and living at, you know, out of different people's places, I lived for a while down there in Phoenix, in Scottsdale, actually. And I left behind a carry-on bag because I couldn't take it to some gig. I forget which. But I left behind a carry-on bag that was just chock full of my old t-shirts, and that's one of them. So that's why it's wrinkly. And I also had a bag full of my hats that I was able to get back to. That made me very happy. This is my co-host, Giada Aguirre de Carcer, on Cannabis Insight. She's the CEO of New Frontier Data. She was wonderful to work with. And there I am, all suited up, baby, in front of the green screen on the set. So it was a really cool situation. This is my view from the anchor desk. You can see the teleprompter and all of that going on. And here's some quick video for you that I shot in Phoenix. Enjoy.
Hey, everybody. Radical Russ here in Phoenix, Arizona at the Cox Television Studios. We're about ready to get to be shooting Cannabis Insight for New Frontier Data. There's Brandy and Maria getting things ready. And as you can see, we've got a real studio here. Got makeup and everything. Got Darren. They're trying to do something with that. I don't know what. Good luck. We'll see what we can put together. But this is like real, you know, inside the NBA, Cox Television, Arizona State, ESPN. A real control room and everything. So this is the full meal deal. And right in here, sports talk. See all sorts of signatures from pro athletes. Then we make our way in here into the studio. And here we are. It's about ready to start shooting. This is where I'll be, up here.
Really?
Got the green screen behind it.
Hey, there you go. So that's a look at the Cox Television Studios there in Phoenix. My opportunity to pretend to be a television personality. We'll see. I sure hope this gets picked up. I can't tell you much more about it, but we are looking to get syndication, and who knows? I might be showing up on your TV someday soon. I hope so. I got all these suits for a reason. All right, stay tuned, because coming up on the show, we've got plenty to talk about today. A look at one of Jeff Sessions' right-hand men, I guess is the term. One of his dearest advisors on the issue of drugs and criminal justice. We got some video of this guy that, once again, doesn't make me feel too good about the possibilities under Jeff Sessions. Then, in the second break, after I have some weed, after the 20 after break, we're going to go off on United Airlines today. I don't know if you saw the video of the guy getting dragged off the plane. I got plenty to say about that. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
I'm only going to try meth once. I'm not going to be like that guy. Hey, look, I'm only going to smoke meth once. I'm not gonna be like that guy. Look, I'm just gonna shoot up just once. All right, I'm not gonna be like that guy. I'm not gonna be like that guy.
I'm only gonna do meth once. I'm not gonna end up like that guy.
This has been the Russ Belville Show's anti-drug public service announcement of the day. Exclusively on RadicalRust.com. Get your tickets now for the Oregon Marijuana Business Conference, happening one day only in Eugene, Oregon, on Friday, April 28th. You'll learn all about the latest OLCC regulations for adult-use cannabis, including testing requirements, tech and branding, taxes and distribution, and the latest developments in medical marijuana regulations. OMBC features networking with Oregon's leading experts in marijuana, including State Senator Floyd Prezansky. You'll also get to hear from author, actor, and punk rock icon Henry Rollins delivering the keynote address. Early bird pricing is available for conference-only and VIP passes, which gets you access to the VIP networking events featuring Henry Rollins and other speakers. It's the 2017 Oregon Marijuana Business Conference. Tickets available now at OregonMBC.com. That's OregonMBC.com before April 14th to get your early bird pricing. OregonMBC.com.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Well, when the president does it, that means that it is not illegal.
Okay. Maybe you're high, too. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Where'd you learn that, Cheech? Drug school.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. And blue blashing gurgan, fuffin' der blashing schnurb norbin. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
Welcome back, everyone. 9 after the hour, and everyone in the cannabis industry and the marijuana movement is looking at the Trump administration, looking at the Department of Justice under Attorney General Jeff Beauregard Sessions, the Sling Blade Hobbit, and wondering what's going to happen. Is there going to be a crackdown? Is there going to be any change in marijuana policies? Most recently, there's been a memo sent out where there's just one line in it indicating that Sessions wants the department to review their enforcement policies on drugs. He's in the past said that the Cole memo provides some useful guidance, but trying to read the tea leaves has been somewhat difficult. But there's a new story up on the Washington Post. The title of it is How Jeff Sessions Wants to Bring Back the War on Drugs. And it starts by discussing how the Obama administration made significant criminal justice reforms with the, a lot of the commutations of longtime nonviolent drug offenders and making the criminal justice system just more humane in general. We'd have Eric Holder calling on the prosecutors not to list weights in mandatory minimum cases and just other ways to try to ease some of the cruelty of the criminal justice system and its inefficiency, for that matter. But as this was getting praise throughout both sides of the political spectrum, you know, Democrats and libertarian-minded Republicans alike were praising this, there was one guy whose name is Stephen H. Cook, a federal prosecutor. He's based in Knoxville, Tennessee. And according to the Washington Post story, says he saw nothing wrong with how the system worked. Not the life sentences for drug charges, not the huge growth of the prison population. And he went everywhere. Bill O'Reilly's show on Fox News, congressional hearings, public panels to spread a different gospel. What is the gospel he wanted to spread? Well, we have some video from the Washington Post to give you some idea.
The federal criminal justice system simply is not broken. In fact, it's working exactly as designed. In the mid-80s, we were facing a spiraling violent crime problem across the country. In fact, for the previous 2.5 decades, violent crime had tripled. Congress said, we're going to do something about this. And what they said we're going to do is we're going to take and we're going to focus on the most violent offenders. We're going to focus on the high-level drug traffickers, and we're going to put them in federal prison. I've been in the system. I've been a federal prosecutor since 1985. 7 years before that, I was on the street dealing with these thugs. What we did beginning in 1985 or along in there is put these laws to work. And what we did by putting them to work is we started filling the federal prisons, not state prisons, federal prisons, with the worst of the worst. And what happened is exactly what Congress said they wanted to happen, and that is violent crime began in 1991, began to turn around. By 2014, we'd cut it in half. That's what the system is doing, and it's designed to do, and it's working exactly as it is. As a result of some of the reforms that we've seen across the country, we've seen violent crime spiraling up across the country.
That's from the Washington Post, edited by Sarah Parnas from Washington Post Live. And one of the problematic issues with this, among many, is a misattribution by this Stephen H. Cook as to what the cause was for the reduction in the violent crime rates in this country. And a lot of people have taken a look at this. Criminal justice folks and people in social policy as well have taken a look at this and found that the policing and policy changes throughout the late 80s, early 90s had little to do with the reduction in crime that happened. You know what had a lot to do with the reduction in crime? Yes, part of it was an improved economy, right? You got the 90s, Bill Clinton, we start to have a better economy. When the economy's better, fewer people commit crimes. But you know what is often attributed to being a cause of the reduced crime rates that started in the early 90s? The authors of a book called Freakonomics, two very well-respected statisticians and economists, took a look at the data, and they found it was the Roe v. Wade decision. The availability, the access to legal abortion had more to do with reducing crime rates throughout the 1990s and 2000s than almost any other factor they took a look at. And they were able to verify this by taking a look at other countries, other places where they were able to have comparable data, like Romania before and after Ceausescu, the dictator who banned abortion in that country. And then after he was gone, how did crime rates change? And why the delay? Well, you figure abortion, Roe v. Wade, 1973, right? By 1990, someone who would have been born in 73 in a bad situation where he wasn't wanted as a child would have been 17 years old by 1990, 18 years old by 1991. And that's how they were able to find that once the abortion was made legal, there was fewer violent crimes being committed. Now, it's controversial to bring this up, and a lot of people have questioned this as well, but the numbers add up, the stats add up, and conceptually it adds up. If you think about it, if you've got people that are in desperate situations, women that are poor, that don't have the ability to care for a kid, that are working 2-3 jobs, and it's not a good time for them to become a parent, they don't have the time to pay attention to their kid, to monitor their kid gets into trouble on the streets, the next thing you know, he's a violent criminal. So there is that aspect that this Stephen H. Cook isn't paying any attention to. And this is a concern because the word is that this guy is the ear. He's got the ear of Jeff Sessions as far as whether or not we're going to change drug policies. And he's one of these, you know, tough on drugs types of guys. The Washington Post story goes on to quote or to cite officials that have knowledge of the situation who remained anonymous to say there are going to be more drug and more gun prosecutions under the Sessions tenure at Department of Justice. Now, that doesn't specifically break it down into are there going to be more marijuana prosecutions amongst those drug prosecutions. I believe, again, and I've said it before, I believe there will be. I believe the Sessions Department of Justice is going to take a look at a couple of cases, 2 or 3 high-profile cases that they can make an easy slam-dunk public relations move with. Say, find some big marijuana producer or provider in Colorado or California or Oregon or someplace who's not following the rules to the letter, who's somehow involved with some sort of out-of-state diversion or problem with kids, and blow that case up and make a big hullabaloo out of it. To send a message, to fire a shot across the bow, to put a chilling effect on the further growth of this industry. And I think a lot of the younger people that are following this don't have an appreciation for how irrational the federal government can be on this issue. They didn't come up through the 70s and 80s when, against all logic, they would do cruel and unnecessary things to people. And the need for this administration to have scapegoats, to be able to have distractions from its, you know, Russia dealings and whatever else might pop up, to me suggests that they're not going to be reticent to pull the trigger on going after the marijuana industry. Now, the other argument is, how successful could they be? To me, I don't think there's an argument whether or not they'll go after us. I think the argument is, how successful can they be? And I don't think they can be that successful. I do agree with my critics who say that marijuana is too big, the horse is out of the barn, that train's left the station, whatever metaphor you want to use, idiom you want to use. I agree to that extent that we're like LeBron James now. Like, they can't hope to shut us down. They can only hope to contain us, but they're going to try to contain us. I do believe they're going to try to contain us. I don't think they can. I think we're going to continue. Legalization will continue. I think we'll pass it in Michigan in 2018. I think Missouri may go for medical in 2018 and have a decent shot. I think Oklahoma even could pass medical in 2018. So I don't think it's going to stop us, but it is going to hurt some people. It is going to hurt some investors. It is going to hurt some businesses. It may hurt the timeline's acceleration, how quickly we get to our final destinations. I do agree, though, with the people that say that it can't be shut down. But for the people who say they're not going to try, that there's not going to be any effort by Jeff Sessions, the number one pot-hating hobbit in the Senate, I think pretty much there's going to be a try.
I think I was trying to suggest something about the duality of man, sir.
All right, when we come back after this safety briefing, after I get myself sufficiently potted up on weed, we're going to talk about that United Airlines overbooking incident. And incident. Fucking fraud is what it is. Fraud and assault. But we'll get to that when we return.
The Russ Belville Show is proudly sponsored by the Marijuana Business Association. The MJBA, called by NBC News the Cannabis Chamber of Commerce, is the fastest growing business association in the fastest growing industry in America. I've been working with the MJBA for years, and I personally invite you to join the MJBA. MJBA also publishes the popular MJ Headline News on Facebook and the MJNewsNetwork.com and Marijuana Channel 1 on YouTube. Visit MJBA.net for more details.
You're not high. You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
Good people don't smoke marijuana.
All right. Well, maybe you're high, too.
This is Radical Russ Belville with a word about dealing with police. Whether marijuana is legal in your state, whether you're a medical marijuana patient, or whether you're a cannabis consumer just trying to survive under prohibition, you should always affirmatively assert your rights in a police encounter. This means you don't answer police questions without your attorney present, and you never consent to a search. Police are not your friend. Besides showing your insurance, registration, and driver's license, there are only three things you should be saying and one thing you should be doing. I cannot answer further questions without my attorney present. I do not consent to any searches. Am I under arrest or am I free to go? And then leave once you've been cleared to go. Don't stick around for any little talks the officer wants to have. Learn this lesson well, and unlike me, you won't have a criminal record. This has been a public service announcement from the Russ Belville Show.
Yar, thar be pirates here. Har, 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 har.
You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, folks, time for me to go off the warpath because I got to talk about something that's not marijuana related, although it's tangentially marijuana related in my case because I fly around this country, nay, this continent, quite a bit. I just got back from Phoenix. I'll be headed to Atlanta in a couple of weeks. I'll head to Dallas a week after that. I've got Berkeley to go to, Anchorage, Alaska, Oakland, California, back to Atlanta again, Seattle, Boston, Atlanta again, three times in Atlanta this year, and even out to Hawaii in December. So I fly a lot. I did 100,000 air miles last year alone. And this incident that occurred with United Airlines flight 3411 from Chicago O'Hare to, was it Charleston that we're headed to? Charlotte? Something like that. One of those southern cities. Has got me outraged. Absolutely outraged. So let's just fill you in. If you haven't seen the video yet, this is video that was shot by passengers on the plane. And the situation was, but let me just give you the video first and then we'll talk about it. Okay, let me get the audio.
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! No! Oh my God! Guys, my God! What are you doing? No, this is wrong! Oh my God! Look at what you did to him! Oh my God! Can't the pilots drive, DeLola? Can't they rent a car for the pilots and have them drive?
No!
Oh my God! Oh my God! Oh my God! No! My guys, my God! What are you doing? No, this is wrong! Oh my God! Look at what you did to him! Oh my God!
All right, so that's the video that happened. That, and of course, the The world is in outrage. United, this is what happened. Here's the situation. So there's this flight. It's getting ready to take off. And they overbooked the flight. They oversold the flight. We'll come back to that in a second. But they oversold the flight. So what happens is at the gate, apparently at the gate, they needed one person to volunteer not to fly in order so they could get these United employees on the flight. Okay, so it wasn't even overbooked, a situation where it was customers that were losing seats, but because they had to get some United pilots over to this other town. So one person volunteers, doesn't go on the flight, but then everybody else gets on the flight, all the rest of the ticketed passengers. So that's when they get back on the flight and say, look, we need more people off the flight to volunteer, and we'll pay you $800. We'll give you, put you up in a hotel and all that, but we need to pay you to volunteer to get off the flight. And so another couple volunteered, got off the flight. So now they needed one more person to get off the flight, and nobody would volunteer, even for the payment. Nobody would volunteer. So they randomly selected this guy, this Asian guy sitting in a, in coach, just randomly selected this guy and said, you have to get off. And he said, I can't get off. I've paid for a seat and I'm a doctor and I've got patients I have to see the next day. So I have to be on this flight. And then you saw what happened. They called law enforcement and dragged the guy off the plane, bloodying his nose. There's some question as to whether or not he was knocked out getting off the plane. Later, he runs back onto the plane, and then they come back and get him again. Now, this time they don't drag him out. This time he leaves. But so this guy has been humiliated, assaulted, dragged off a plane for a seat he's already paid for because he was randomly selected so they could get some United employees to the other city. Now, first of all, let's go back to how this happened in the first place, this concept of overbooking. Now, this happens on airlines all the time. If you don't fly a lot, let me explain. Say you got a plane, it's got 300 seats on it. We're going to keep the numbers simple, right? This isn't real world numbers. They sell different seats for different prices to different people at different times and different places. Airline pricing is a monster, let me tell you. But let's keep it simple for the discussion's sake. Say you got a plane, you got 300 seats on the plane. And you're going to charge $300 a seat. So your plane going to make $90,000 on the 300 people that fill those seats. $90,000 you're going to make if that plane is full. And let's just presume it is. Full plane, $90,000. Now, coming out of that $90,000, you got to pay for some stuff. You got to pay for the pilot salary. You got to pay for the co-pilot. You got to pay for the flight attendants. You got to pay for the snacks. And especially you got to pay for the fuel. You got to pay for that jet fuel to get that plane from place to place, right? And part of the cost of paying for that jet fuel is how much does the plane weigh? An empty plane costs less to fly than a full plane. Full plane, you got to have more go juice to get that plane to the next place, right? So you can do some math. You could estimate. You could say average person might be 150 pounds, factoring in big people versus little people, take an average. Let's say it's 150 just to make the math easy. Another 50 pounds for their baggage, let's say. So 200 pounds per seat. So you got to figure, all right, I'm getting $300 a seat, 300 seats, $90,000, but I got to pay for enough gas to get that plane with 660,000 pounds of people and stuff to the next place, right? Okay, that's your setup, right? But airlines commonly and frequently and routinely overbook their planes. They got 300 seats to sell, but they'll sell 310. Again, making up numbers just for the sake of keeping this conversation easy, right? But they'll sell, let's say, 310. Now, why do they do that? Well, their argument is sometimes people don't show up for flights. If someone doesn't show up for a flight, there's an empty seat. And by goodness, you can't expect us to just let a seat go empty when we could sell it. Well, yes, I do. Somebody paid for that seat. In what other industry do you get to charge somebody twice for the same product, and after the first person picks up the product, you get to tell the second person to go screw themselves? Because I'll tell you what, you don't show up for that flight and that seat's empty, they don't give you your money back. So, again, Pretend our flight, 300 seats, but they sell 310 tickets. So now they're not making $90,000 on the flight. They're making $93,000 on the flight. They're making an extra $3,000. Well, I might get my numbers wrong. $96,000, whatever. $300 seat, another 10 seats, another $3,000. Right. So $93,000 rather than $90,000, right? I said, I told myself I was going to keep the numbers easy. So you're making an extra $3,000 overselling 10 tickets. Now, they presume, and they do the math on this, they figure out, okay, what's the history of this flight? What's the average number of people who don't show up? What are the weather conditions? What are the connections like coming out of the other cities? Is there going to be flight delays? Will people miss their flights? So they have this mathematical formula that tells them, hey, go ahead and sell 10 more tickets because 10 people won't show up on average. But it's not even really that 10 people won't show up on average. Because what's the cost to the airline to compensate someone that's overbooked? Let's pretend it's $600. Again, to keep the numbers easy. If it's $600 to reimburse someone who paid $300 for a seat and they got overbooked, if five or fewer people don't show up, you just made extra money. See, my seat, my $90,000 plane, if I sell $93,000 worth of tickets, but two people are inconvenienced, I have to pay $1,200 bucks out, I'm making $91,800, right? I'm making an extra $1,800 for selling seats twice. Why are they allowed to do that? Why are they? Do you remember the Seinfeld episode where Jerry Seinfeld reserves a rental car, and he goes to the rental car desk and they say, sorry, we're out of cars. And he goes, how can you be out of cars? I reserved one. They say, oh, well, we overbooked. We sold it. Well, then you didn't reserve a car. Oh, yeah, well, we have a reservation, but we didn't reserve it. You don't understand what the word reserve means, do you? You don't understand what reserve means. Here's my solution for this thing. First of all, they shouldn't be able to do it in the first place, because that $90,000 plane with the 300 seats sold, if a guy doesn't show up for his $300 seat and you don't pay him back, not only are you getting the $300 already, you're also making up the 200 pounds of weight in fuel costs that guy's ass and his baggage aren't taking up anymore. So you actually made a profit when people didn't show up, but that wasn't enough profit for you. You had to sell the seat again. And it's not like people, when they're buying airplane tickets, it's like they're buying ice cream cones. Like, oh, if I can't have ice cream today, it's no big deal. No, the big deal is that when it comes to an airline flight, you're depending on another connection. You've got a specific place to be. The only reason you're choosing to fly, because flying sucks, is that you have to be somewhere really quickly and you can't afford to drive there or take a train or do it telecommuting or whatever. You've exhausted every option but getting on a plane. And now they expect you to change your whole world, change your whole travel schedule, change your whole vacation itinerary. Because they fucked up, they oversold, they couldn't deal with just making the profit off the lower fuel costs, they had to make more profit by inconveniencing people. Now, in my chat room, they're telling me the maximum allowance is $1,300 in compensation. So again, if I'm United, I oversell enough to make up what I might lose in $1,300 per passenger. It's just cost-benefit analysis. It's as sick as the corporations like GM, was it, that wouldn't replace an ignition switch because they did the numbers and they said, oh, well, yeah, X number of people will die from the ignition switch, but the amount we'd have to pay off in settlements would be less than the cost of fixing the damn ignition switch, so go ahead and let them die. Now, we look at those things, we think evil corporations, but there's no evil involved in it. A corporation is by its design a sociopathic entity. Its only job is to maximize profit. Fuck everything else. Fuck life, fuck the planet, fuck environment, doesn't matter. Maximize profit. That's where government comes in. That's where law comes in, to set the rules, to set the boundaries, to make sure these avaricious, predatory pricks can't fuck us over. But they do, but because we allow them. We don't hold our feet to the fire, and because money speaks more than voters at this point. But this should never be allowed. If I put a car up for sale on Craigslist and I took a bid on the internet and the guy said, I'll give you $4,000 for that car. And I said, all right, wire me the money. And he wires me the $4,000. And then an hour later, somebody else calls me and says, hey, I'd like to buy that car. And I say, oh, yeah, sure. Wire me the $4,000. and he wires me the $4,000. And then the first guy shows up, picks up the car, drives off. The second guy shows up, hey, where's my car? Oh, sorry, I overbooked it. I overbooked your car. Do you think there wouldn't be some cops called at that point if I wasn't ready to fork that $4,000 over? No, I think there'd be a fraud case involved here. I think there'd be some problems at this point if I didn't give the money back. But no, airlines, you don't show up for the seat, you don't get the money back, and they sell it again? How is that not fraud? Now, I have some solutions. I hate to bitch about stuff without having solutions, so I have solutions. Number one solution, the poor guy who got his ass yanked out of the United seat by law enforcement and his nose bloodied and all, obviously should sue. And the settlement, the punitive damage in this, should be equal to the profit United Airlines makes on every double sold seat in 2017. You could calculate this. You could count how many seats they sold versus how many seats are on the airplane. Do the subtraction, figure out the profit, and that's what you pay that guy. We need to make this not unprofitable for the airlines to overbook seats. They only do it because it's profitable. They do it because they can. It's like insurance, man. They have actuarial tables. They have statistical probability tables. And they say, oh, flight 1312, gosh, you can oversell that by 4 tickets. Oh, flight 10, you can oversell that by 6 tickets, right? And they can get away with it because probability-wise, it works out. Rarely does someone get bumped. Like I said, I've been flying for 5 years, 300,000 air miles. This has never happened to me. I've never had to be taken off a plane. I've had situations where they say it's overbooked and will you take the voucher? I never take it. But I got shit to do. I got places to go. But I've seen people take it. We need to make this unprofitable for them. And I have an idea how to do it. Make any overbooked seat that needs to be emptied a reverse auction without upper bound. Here's how that works. We're all sitting on the plane. Plane's full. Attendant gets up. Gate personnel, whoever the hell, gets the front place. I'm sorry, we've got a situation where this flight has been overbooked. And we will offer $300 to anyone who will volunteer to get off the plane. And when nobody volunteers, all right, the offer is now $350. And when nobody volunteers, all right, the offer is $400. And that offer keeps going up by $50 until someone takes it. Here's why this would work. If it were just one seat, the airlines could probably get away with that. I know someone's going to jump at a $300 or $400 or $500 ticket pretty quick. But if they need to clear 4 seats, that price is going to get pretty high because everybody's going to wait it out saying, I'm not going to take the first offer. We're going to wait and see. Now, eventually some couples will start taking, right? A couple will take that first 2 offer because they're like, well, we better get them quick before, because if they go tickets one by one. So I imagine eventually so it gets high enough so one person takes an offer and then there's 3 tickets left. And that's when a couple goes, oh shit, we better get the next one. And they get the next 2. And then there's 1 ticket left. And we'll just see how high that gets before someone takes it. So we will see. This just shouldn't be allowed whatsoever. I don't understand the legality behind a company being allowed to sell the same product twice and then gyp someone out of that the second person out of that product. I don't understand how they're allowed to get away with that, especially when you consider the airlines are federally regulated and there's all sorts of antitrust and stuff going on there too. Someone can explain this to me. I'd love to hear it, but I hope this guy wins the shit out of this lawsuit.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com.
All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of The Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio.
You're listening to The Russ Belville Show.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning. Hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they pay me to say that.
Yeah, baby! Yeah.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. I have a package here for Radical Rick. Is there a Radical Rick here? How about a Rick Russ? Any Rick Russ? Somebody named Freddie Barak has sent him a package. Anybody? What is that? Sounds like a skunk. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation, only on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. I'm not done with this airline stuff. I just got another angle on it for you. Because this weekend, I was the victim of some airline shenanigans as well. Oh, yeah, folks. Let me tell you the little story. So I'm supposed to be in Phoenix for this TV shoot for a pilot for New Frontier Data. They've rented out this, and this has been in the works for 4 months now, right? And it was supposed to happen in January, then it was supposed to happen in February, then it was supposed to happen in March. It finally happens in April. Lots of reasons why. It doesn't matter. But, you know, these things are complex, right? When you're putting together a network quality television show, it's complex. There's a lot of moving parts, okay? But they finally get it all worked out for this week, this last weekend on Friday. Went down for filming on the 7th. Now, the other thing that was critical about this is we wanted to get this done January, February, March because, you know, my schedule's pretty light January, February, March. But once April hits, a pot guy in April, your schedule, your dance card fills up real quick, right? So, like, the times I would have available to fly out to Phoenix and do a shot, especially on a weekend when anybody else could get there, were few and far between April and, say, October, right? So this is kind of time critical. But it finally came down to us getting a spot on April 7th, Friday. And so the idea, we're going to fly me down to Phoenix. They'd already flown down the executive producer. They've rented the studio, the thousands of dollars that cost. They got the techs. They got the sound techs and the teleprompter guys and the camera people. Everybody that's involved. Makeup even. Yeah, I had to have powder on my shiny little head. So get everybody down there and arrange for this, right? Of course, they got to get me there. So I was originally scheduled for this flight that was going to get me through Denver. It's going to be a layover in Denver and a layover, and then on the way back, a layover in Denver. But then after we booked it, we realized, oh, wait, that's like an overnight layover. That's like one of them, you know, you get there at 6 at night and then you leave the next morning kind of flights. We didn't want to do that. I didn't want to stay in Denver. So we canceled that flight and got another flight. And this was a United flight. This was a United flight, as a matter of fact, that was going to go through San Francisco. Portland, San Francisco, Phoenix, and not have an overnight layover. Okay, all good. Everything's great. That flight will be fine. So I get to the airport on Thursday to catch the flight. And I'm an early flight. Like, I get to the airport early. I'm a writer. I can always sit in the, you know, airport and write and, you know, spend the time. So I get to the airport early. And the first thing I notice, I don't have my TSA pre-check, which, doggone it, right? So I'm supposed to check in for the flight online, and it won't check in online. It says, see the gate. I'm like, okay. So we get there, and my flight's supposed to be at like 2:30, and I get there at 12:30, you know, afternoon, and try to check in, and the gate agent says, well, your ticket's been canceled. Like, my ticket's been canceled? Huh? What? Yeah, my ticket had been canceled. And they said, United says, that Travelocity canceled the ticket, which was who my company was booking through, the production company was booking through. So I have to get on the phone to the people in Phoenix saying, hey, I'm not going to be able to get on a flight. And this is like the last flight that'll get you from Portland to Phoenix today. So we better figure something out. And it was a big mess of trying to call United, trying to call Travelocity. Travelocity blames United for telling them the flight was canceled. United says the flight was never canceled. We never told Travelocity that. Then Travelocity comes up with another excuse that I didn't show up for an earlier flight that nobody had ever heard of me being on. Just a big mess, right? Big old honking mess. And to compound the mess, there was like terrible weather on the East Coast this weekend, and it delayed like a couple thousand flights. And so the whole backbone of U.S. air travel was all ripple delayed through the entire country. And United was on a 45-minute wait time on their call center, and Travelocity was no help. So I already had a pretty pissy attitude toward United coming into today. And then when I saw that video of the guy getting dragged off the plane, well, that just cemented it. Something needs to be done about air travel in the United States of America. And I blame Reagan, as I blame a lot of things. It's Reagan's fault. He's the one that deregulated the airlines in the 80s and stood up the air traffic controllers, destroyed their union. Everything since 1980, you know, everything that's bad about air travel has happened basically since 1980, in my observation. But there needs to be something to fix this. And I don't know how nationalized it needs to be, or what sort of taxpayer subsidies need to happen, or what. But the system we got is seriously broken when it comes to air travel. I mean, from the, you know, torturous seating. Because again, oh, well, we got to let them make a profit. We got to let them cram people together like eggs in a crate, sardines in a can, because, well, we can. Because we can get away with it. These kind of things need to stop. This practice of overbooking needs to stop. Not just federal law says if you're overbooked, you can get this much money. No, it needs to just stop. They shouldn't be able to play the risk like that, play the probabilities. Yes, we want airlines to be profitable and all, but they should also adhere to some base minimum standard of decency when it comes to dealing with the public. I'm put in mind of that. And other things, I mean, like, for example, Frontier Airlines. Just to pick on Frontier, Spirit's the same way. These airlines, you'll see these fares, and they'll say, oh, $119 fare. And you go, oh, great, $119 fare, that's cool. I can afford that. I can get off to wherever, and that'd be great, $119 fare. So you log on, and you go sign up for that fare, and you get to the part where it says the seat picking, right? You got to pick, you know, do I want to sit by the window? I'm going to fit by the wing. Where am I going to sit, right? Well, on most airlines, when you get to that page, there's a bunch of seats that are taken, a bunch of seats that are open, and there's a few seats that'll have a dollar sign on them for something, right? This $25 for the exit row seat, or $35 for the seats that are closest to the front of the plane, right? But the rest of the seats are blank, and you can just pick, oh, I don't want to spend extra money, I'll pick that seat. Not on Frontier. On Frontier, every seat has a price. At minimum, for the shitty seat in the aisle in the back, or in the middle in the back, you got to pay $9 minimum. So it's like, yes, $119 to fly our plane. Oh, great. I'd love to fly on your plane. Oh, you didn't want to sit down, did you? Well, if you want to sit down, I'm afraid that's extra. We have to charge you $9 for that. And then you get to the baggage part, right? The baggage part. All right. Most planes are starting to charge for baggage now. And that sucks. But you understand it. You add an extra weight to the plane. They got to pay for the gas. So I understand these people bringing 45-pound suitcases and checking them at the gate. They should have to pay more, sure. But they started charging, some of these airlines started charging for carry-on items. Your little roller bag. Well, Frontier even charges you for your personal item. Like if you're taking a purse or a satchel or a backpack or something, right? So it's like, well, you didn't want to sit down and actually take clothes with you, did you? You didn't want to change your clothes. And this, oh, well, I'm afraid that's extra too. So all this little bullshit that's associated with these airlines, and they're allowed to get away with it. And I just don't understand why they're allowed to get away with treating people this way. But I think it's summed up by that South Park episode. You remember the South Park episode where they come up with the big wheel that replaces, that's 500 mile per hour travel across the country? The only disadvantage is the way that it's driven is by a stick that's shoved up your ass. And everybody's like, well, at least it's better than flying. That's what I feel like every time, man. It's just insane what we're putting up with. All right. One other story that hit the news today, just to shift gears a little bit, is the shooting. I don't know which one, right? It's America. There was a school shooting in San Bernardino, an apparent murder-suicide, where two adults are dead and two kids were injured. The descriptions of it to me, like if I was guessing, it sounds like a guy who was dating a teacher who then went in and killed the teacher and killed himself. That would be my guess, but I'm speculating. I have no true knowledge of that, but the descriptions, it makes it sound that way. Anyway, so there's this shooting in the school, and I'm weary of it now. I'm like, all right, let's cue the regular cycle, right? Okay, first, let's start with the, oh my God, there was a shooting in a school. And then now, let's get to the, oh my God, we need to have some sort of gun control. And then let's get to the, oh no, we've got to arm all the teachers and all the kids in the schools. We got to arm everybody. And then let's just go right on to the not doing anything about it. Can we just bypass the whole cycle this time? Can we just ignore it and just get right to the not doing anything about it? Because we're not going to do anything about it. Let's just not have any news about school shootings anymore, because what's the point? We're not going to do anything about it. We're not going to change any laws. We're not going to institute any major, you know, restrictions or criminal background check. At least not now, not with Trump and the whole GOP Congress and a 5-4 Supreme Court. Forget it. We're not doing anything about it. So, you know, it was just another shooting, just another day in San Bernardino, and just another shooting, just another couple dead people, some injured kids. Nobody's going to do anything about it. So let's move on to some other news, right? It's sad to have to feel that way. And part of what bothers me is how there's so many issues and there's only so much bandwidth for people to focus on. And a lot of news is going to focus on this San Bernardino shooting today. So it's going to drop off the coverage of the United thing, and it's going to bypass covering the Trump-Russia thing and the fact that we're launching missiles at Syria and that we've got cruiser destroyers heading toward North Korea. And, oh my God, we're going to need a lot of weed is what I'm saying. We're going to need a whole lot of weed over the next 4 years. Concentrates would help, edibles, whatever you can think of. Let's get that happening here, because it's going to get ugly over these next few years. But hopefully it gets better here. Hopefully, at least in the weed arena, we can make some progress. Don't forget, May 1st, this becomes the Marijuana Agenda with Russ Belville. And you can log on to the new websites and social media. They are up now. Not much on them, but you can connect and be one of the first. It's MJ Agenda on everything except Twitter, where it's MJ Agenda Show. Because Mustafa Jagenda got MJ Agenda before I did. MJAgenda.com as well. We're back to close up the show right after this.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
You know Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs, we've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter.
You're listening to the Russ Belville Show.
In my view, the time is long overdue for us to remove the federal prohibition on marijuana.
You can find Radical Russ online everywhere. Warning, hits taken on this show are larger than they appear. Do not try this at home. These people are professionals. Or at least they aim you.
stay there.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
A public service message from the Russ Belville Show. Remember, friends, there's more to life than marijuana. I just can't remember what it is.
Why'd I come in here?
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 54 and a half after the hour as we wrap things up. Quick reminders about our schedule here on the show, because we will be traveling on Friday. So no live show on Friday as I make my drive deep into absolute prohibition territory, into the state of Idaho, where I'm going to see if I can get myself arrested. Not the usual way, though. I'm trying to make a political point. So I've got this speech I'm working on in my head, where I'm going to call the attention of the assembled law enforcement officers who will be there watching the gig. And I'll say, we need the attention of law enforcement because there's a crime in progress. There is a crime in progress right here in the park. A crime for which the punishment in Idaho is equal to the punishment for punching a pregnant woman. A crime in the state of Idaho for which the punishment is equal to stealing someone's television. A crime for which in the state of Idaho the punishment is worse than the punishment for a first-time DUI. And that crime is me being under the influence of marijuana in public. That's right, in Idaho, being under the influence of marijuana in public is a misdemeanor with a possible $1,000 fine and 1 year in jail. The same as assault on a pregnant woman, not a domestic assault, not like, spousal abuse. That's felony in Idaho. But if you just randomly walked up to a pregnant woman in the street and punched her, you'd get the same punishment as being high in Idaho in public. Petty theft, the punishment, $1,000, 1 year, misdemeanor, just like being high in public. And again, first time DUI in Idaho, $1,000 fine, 6 months in jail possibility for a first time DUI. So I'm going to say to these officers, hey, I'm under the influence of marijuana in public. You need to arrest me. I'm committing a misdemeanor right now. Now, obviously, I won't be high, but the point would be that I was in Oregon not 2 hours ago in Ontario, or however many hours it'll be, whatever, hour even. But I was in Oregon, and I legally smoked marijuana. I'm over the age of 21. I legally smoked marijuana, and the active THC in marijuana is detectable in my bloodstream for days after I smoke it. If it's active, it must be having an influence on me. So I must be under the influence of marijuana in public right here on stage in Idaho. And therefore, I'm committing a misdemeanor. And I'm wondering why the cops aren't running up here to arrest me. Because surely if I was punching a pregnant woman on stage here, they'd come up and arrest me, wouldn't they? And surely if I was in possession of someone's stolen television on stage, running across the stage, they'd come and arrest me. And I hope to God that if they saw me weaving around the road, first time DUI, they'd pull me over and arrest me. So we'll see, folks. So we won't have a show on Friday, and whether or not we have a show on Monday may be determined by bail money. So we will see what happens. That's all the time we got for today, folks. Thanks for joining us here on RadicalRust.com. You live listeners, don't worry. No matter what changes, we're still going to be live here on YouTube because I love this format. Thanks for joining us. Check out MJAgenda.com, MJAgenda on Facebook, MJAgenda Show on Twitter. For everyone here at Delta 9 House and Studios, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. www.thefederalcriminaljusticesystem.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you giant, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.